Vanessa.
Morning, Victor.
Good morning, sir.
Okay, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, sir.
Okay. Morning, Blessing. You're welcome.
Good morning, sir. Sir, I can't hear anything. I don't know if there's an issue from my network or it's from your audio over there. Thank you, sir.
I'm not sending any audio right now. I'm just waiting for the class to
okay, sir.
Come together. We can start, but there are only three people here.
Okay, sir.
So class rep, what's happening with your class?
I don't know. I'm sure they'll come. Maybe they are just running late.
Yeah, but I mean, it's okay. I hope they are not tired. Are you guys tired?
But we can't be tired.
That's not an answer.
I'm sorry, it's actually relating.
The answer is relative?
Yes, sir.
I thought it's a simple yes or a no. If you're tired, you need a break. If it's relative, I'm not sure what to think. Or you're tired of power outages and things like that. So even the guys on campus don't seem to be connecting.
It's only Emmanuel is on campus right now.
Okay. Let me see. It does seem like there's internet on campus. So.
Emmanuel says he's having trouble connecting, so probably there's no internet.
Is it possible that they're using the wrong link? Are they using the link for last week? It's not the same as this week.
Yeah, I think he should be aware.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Do you guys have a WhatsApp group you typically use for these things?
Good morning, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, good morning, Manuel.
Yes, we do have a WhatsApp group for the class. We are just sharing ideas and also sort of things in that group.
Okay.
Is there any
reason why people are late?
I think it's the issue, maybe is connection. Because even me, I was late because I was trying to connect, but the join button was not responding. So I had to restart my system and try to join again.
Okay. Okay, I think it's 10 minutes after the hour. So maybe we can start by trying to understand if there are any questions from the previous classes or yesterday's class that you would like us to go over again.
Sorry, sir, can we just go back to the last part of yesterday's lecture?
Okay.
When we were calculating the, we were using the integration and the, it was integration, I think it was integration, yeah, where we are looking for the area under the curve.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you have a specific question?
I remember you said when we want to get the very accurate solution in finding the area under the curve, we must we're supposed to consider the very minimal values, and according to the drawing you said the smaller the minimal value, the accurate our calculations.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, so my confusion was on this slide, this integration determines the numerical area under the function may be approximated from summation as shown in the accuracy is inversely proportional to the width.
So we're talking about this slide, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
So on this slide, we were talking about the area which is under this curve.
Yes.
It means that we have to consider the area of the rectangle, then we remove the area which is occupied by the triangle after when that curve line of curve passed.
Okay.
So I had a thought, like it means that when we have a very, very minute scale, like for instance, I was thinking about these, I don't know how to call them. In picture, we have these pixels. So I was thinking about when you are looking into this example, and when you are talking about having the very minimal value for scaling values, it means that you'll be having something like which is related to which is related to those pixels. It means that we can have like some micro dots, which when we sum up together, we get the accurate area of that triangle under the line of curve. So is it what I'm thinking is okay? So if it's okay, it means that we have to be sensitive in data, because if anything happened like change in every in anything related to that data might bring out the answer which is not accurate.
Okay, so basically you will understand that there are two separate things. Okay, so yesterday during the class, what I described for you was the fact that to get the real area, you have to take the area of a rectangle, okay, subtract a little triangle and add another triangle. Can you see that? So in each of the rectangles, it's necessary for you to, to find out the area that the part that is under a curve. You have to get the area of a rectangle, subtract a triangle, and add another triangle. Yeah?
Yes, sir.
Are you with me? Okay.
Yes,
so,
sir.
If you read the text in the yellow box, it says determining the area can be approximated from the summation of fixed width slices of F at midpoints. Okay, so essentially it's just saying calculate the area of the triangle. Okay, don't bother yourself about subtracting and the area of the rectangle. Don't bother calculating the triangles for addition and subtractions. Okay, so just use the midpoint of each rectangle and use that for the calculations. It's an approximation, it will still work. And then the next sentence, accuracy is inversely proportional to the width, is now saying that as I continue to reduce the size of each slice, I eliminate the triangles completely. So if my width is small enough, then I won't have any triangles at all, or the triangles will be so small that their errors are being counted in decimal places. You know?
Okay, sir.
So the key concept is the more, the smaller widths I have, the more triangles I have to calculate. And the more triangles I have to calculate, the longer it will take me to calculate this numerically. Unless I'm doing on a parallel system. Okay, thank you for the question. Is there any other question? We welcome Mary and Margaret.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. You're welcome. We were asking if there are any questions from yesterday's class that you would like us to address before we start today's lesson.
No, sir. I understood even when I watched the video again.
Okay. Let's say a few minutes before 10, I sent you the lecture notes for today's classes. I hope you've all received them, or you should check for them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes, we have.
Okay. Let me open it. Okay. So at the end of it, you will find the homework for this week. Okay. Okay. So we've spent this week looking at threads. Okay. And if you remember correctly, threads are nothing more than lightweight instances of a process, okay? they tend to represent an independent or separate execution path internal to an application. So you must have a containing application, and then internally it can have threads that do different things. For example, when you use a word processor, you can think about several threads in complicated applications like a word processor. There will be a thread for reading the keyboard. Okay, there will be another thread for updating the screen based on what you typed on the keyboard. There will be a thread for moving the mouse or something similar, or responding to input coming in from the mouse. Okay. So in a sense, threads are very useful because they allow this kind of situations. What we know is that threads share memory. So the memory that belongs to the application are all seen by all the threads. If you look at the diagram on this slide, you'll find that at the very top, you have what you might call your application. So there are program instructions, there's data, and there could be even files, okay? Each thread tends to maintain a separate view of what its registers look like. It might have a separate stack as well. And then the light green portion represents the independent execution parts. So I was mentioning about the word processor application, one thread is looking at your keyboard, another thread is updating the screen, and a third thread might be responding to what's coming in from the mouse. Okay. In practice, you do need to have some coordination. So there's typically the need for what one might call a master thread. Okay, generally, threads don't have any concept of master or slave. It's up to the programmer to determine what a master thread should be doing and stuff like that, especially when it comes to coordinating the activities of all the other threads. The good news is that if you have access to a Linux machine or you have Linux on your laptop, you can already program in pthreads. Interestingly enough, if you are using Windows 10, you can already use something called Windows Services for Linux. Yes, I think it's WSL or something like that, to have your own copy of Ubuntu running directly inside your Windows machine. As far as I remember, WSL allows you to work with command line programs. I think the GUI applications, at least as of late last year, it was not possible. But I heard rumors that Microsoft is already working on making sure that you can also run Linux GUI applications directly inside Windows. Okay, but we will stick with using a cluster because it's much more exciting and interesting than trying to do things on our laptops. But the possibility is there. So one can program threads or even test threads on your laptop or any machine you have access to. Okay, so these are more or less the steps one might need for creating a pthread application. You log into the HPC cluster or to a Linux machine. You create or edit a C source code file. In this case, I decided to call it pt_hello.c. Okay, the command we use, if you remember, is nano pt_hello.c. Once we finish typing in the contents, we can compile it. We save, of course, and then compile using the command CC. CC is short for the C compiler. With the option minus pthread, then minus O pt underscore hello, and the name of the C file, pt underscore hello dot C. Once that is completed, if there are errors, of course, you have to go back and check the source code again to see that everything is okay. But once you successfully compile, which will be a situation where you don't get an error message, the CC command just executes and then exits immediately. You can then create a job script. Okay, and to create a job script, you use the nano again, but this time we can create a file, pt underscore hello.job. Okay, and once we've saved the file, we submit the job noting the job ID. So whenever you submit a job on a cluster, you are giving back a reference number, which is known as the job identifier or job ID. And the submission process is achieved using the command qsub. Just give me a minute. Good morning, sir. Fine, thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, yes.
Sir, I have a question.
Okay, go for it.
So that master thread we're talking about, is it like that? You know, yesterday you gave some examples of those parallel programs that after they run, then they'll be another one that will now run on top, like that max something. So that master thread, is it like that max thread or mean, all those threads that will be the final computation?
Yes, so if you have to carry out an exercise like that, the master thread will be responsible for collecting the results from all other threads and compiling the final results, okay? In certain other situations, the master thread is also responsible for dividing the data. So in the case of where you are scattering, you're breaking up your data and sending chunks to the various threads, the master thread is typically responsible for that. When one speaks about thread, the truth is the threads have direct access to all the data as far as the application is concerned. So typically you don't really have to give them separate data to work with. They can access, even if it's just a fraction of the data they need to work, they can access it directly. But when they produce results, you need somebody to coordinate and put these results together and present them, especially if the results have to be added or multiplied or stuff similar. Okay. So thank you for the good question. Okay, and then eventually you can also view the output. So once you've submitted the job, you get a job ID. You can always check the status of your job using QStart. It will tell you when it's running. It will tell you when you no longer get an output on QStart, then it's finished execution. And then the thing is, if we set up things correctly according to the template job ID that we had, we are going to see our output in a file called pt_hello.o with some number after the O. The number is the job ID you got from the previous step when you submitted the job. Okay, so it's always important that you can understand that you'll find the output here, output job ID. And this is useful, especially if you've submitted several versions of the same job. You can always find the separate outputs based on the job ID of the individual jobs. Okay, are there any questions about this? This is just a summary of the steps that, yes.
So can one job give you more than one job ID?
No, unless that job submits other jobs. Okay. So
if we,
yeah.
In this example, if we do this PT hello or something, you said the job ID, in case there are different job ID, you need to specify. I thought if we're running a program of this hello.c, it's going to be like one job to get the output.
Yes. But I can submit the same job, exactly the same job, 5 different times. I can submit it 10 times. Okay. Each time I run the QSub, it will give me a separate job ID and it will make sure the output goes to a different file.
Okay, sir.
So we typically use that in it's a form of parallel programming. So for example, if I have a serial job, a job that only uses one core, and I'm running on a machine that has 10 cores, okay? If I submit my job, it's going to only use one core and the other 9 cores are idle. So it makes sense that, okay, I can in principle say, okay, I'm not sure which parameters, which of my input parameters to these jobs are correct. I can vary the parameters slightly and then submit 10 of them at the same time and they will all run concurrently at the same time or in parallel on different cores, of course, and produce me output. So in a situation where I will have had to run sequentially 10 times, I'm now able to run 10 at the same time and I can get my 10 results in the time I will have taken to get one result. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's typically referred to as embarrassingly parallel. So our jobs don't communicate one with another. They are not as complex as the atmospheric, as the weather prediction, where you have the sea and the sky and the rivers all contributing something. Instead, these are jobs that they run and they don't talk to themselves. So I can simply submit multiple copies of them. Even if they use threads, all the threads will just work within one core. Okay, that's what you have to understand here, especially with pthreads programming. Okay?
Okay, sir.
Okay, so what does the pthello.c look like? This is the C source code. You can see that we have the preprocessor directives on top here. So we are including a header file called pthread.h. And then we're including our standard input output and then standard library. Okay. And then we are also defining a variable called num threads. So number of threads, and we set it to 5. So essentially, what we are saying is that this program should create 5 threads. And then we have a subroutine, first of all, called print hello. It's provided with a special object, thread ID. I didn't mention this type to you, but C provides a special type called void. Void is typically when you have a function that doesn't return anything, or you have a variable that you are not sure of the type, but you are just going to pass a pointer. So in this case, we are passing a pointer to a variable called thread ID. And then inside the subroutine, we define a variable long of type long named TID. I think that was short for thread ID again. And then TID is casting the object that was passed using long to that value. So we simply dereference the pointer we got and we read its contents as a long value. Okay, and then it has a printf statement that says hello world from thread number percentage LD. Okay, percentage LD is for long, and then we end it with an exclamation and a new line, slash n, prints a new line. And then the variable TID, the contents of TID will be placed wherever we have this percentage LD. Okay. And then we simply call pthread exit. So whenever a thread runs this subroutine, it's essentially going to exit after doing that. Okay. And then in our main routine, we have a definition of pthreads. So we are simply asking the system that we want to have threads or references, including separate stack and things like that, for threads based on the number of threads we specified earlier, num threads. Okay. And then we define a variable called RC, and we define a variable long. So for t is equal to 0 and t is less than number of threads, we increment. We start a for loop. And what does the for loop do? It prints a message saying we are in the main subroutine and we are creating thread number so, so and so. Okay. And then we call the special function pthreadCreate, with a reference to the memory object we created here, threads, indexed at the right point, along with the function we want that thread to start at. So you can, in principle, also have threads start at different subroutines if you want. But here we have it calling the function print hello, and it's going to pass it void pointer to t, which is the direct memory of this variable. The output from this function can be zero or non-zero. If it is non-zero, then there was an error. And so we print out the error, saying error is this. Okay. But if it's zero, we know that it worked fine. If there was an error, we terminate the whole program immediately by calling exit. So we abort. If not, we complete the loop for the number of threads. And then the main subroutine was also being run by a thread of its own. So we have to call pthread exit on this. So I'll go over it again. In main, we start by initializing a thread layer, okay? And then we end by calling pthread exit. Should be the last thing that your main function will do. So we must start with this, telling the system to split into X number of threads. In principle, you don't have to do that here, but you can also, so essentially here we prepare the system for the number of threads we have. Okay, but then you can process things in a serial manner until you are ready to create threads. So we are only ready to create threads when we come to this line with pthreads create. So everything here int rc, long t, and the for loop are common to each thread. They are run by one thread, which is the master thread. And then when we now create separate threads, we start them off, and finally we end everything by exiting. Is that clear? I don't know, are there any questions or anyone having issues with this? Okay.
It's clear, sir.
Come again.
I said it's clear, sir.
Okay. And then creating the job script, it's the contents on this side, on the right-hand side of the slide. So that's nanopthello.job, and you should simply fill the contents with this. Don't mind the highlight. Your editor may not show the gray highlight, but that's fine. Just the basic text. You should type it in as it is. Okay, and then the key line is this .pt_hello. Note that before you can run this job script, you have to compile this. So slides 3 and 4, okay, we create the source code file step 2 here. Okay, is when you use the contents you have here. Okay. And then step 3 is compiling it, cc-pthread-opt_hello.c. And then after that, after you've compiled it, you then do nanopt_hello.job. And you are now ready to submit the job, noting the job ID. And then once the job has finished running, you can look at the output from the job. Okay. So you are going to need this information later when you do your homework. So you can always reference it later on. Okay. The syntax of the program is correct.
Okay.
And so there shouldn't be any errors. If you type it, if you have an error, please make sure you type things as they are. And please note that it's not possible to cut and paste this. Okay, it's deliberately done so that you have to type it in. Okay, because I believe when you make that effort, then you understand better. Cutting and pasting lets you get away with too many things. Okay. But if you have problems, come back and check the contents of the slide against what you have in the file. Even if you have to go line by line, you'll typically end up discovering what the error is. Anyway, if there are any strong challenges, you can always write me. And I can also look at your source code on the disk of the, if you're doing it on one of the HPC clusters, I can also come in and have a look at what you've typed. So when you submit your assignments for this week, I'm also going to log in and look at what you have done. And look at the contents of the files you are submitting. The files you submitted, you are supposed to also submit the job IDs of the job you executed. And so I will look at the outputs that were generated by those jobs as well. Somebody had a question?
Sir, please, what is it for the assignment?
Come again.
preparing the deadline for the assignment?
Ideally, you should be submitting it tomorrow. But if you want, we can accept it for Monday.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Sorry, sir.
Yes, Emmanuel.
From this homework, what I'm supposed to do is just to log into the cluster and do all these stuffs, and that's it. Or I have to take those codes and submit them to you.
You don't need to submit the codes or the output file, but you will need to tell me the job ID. Okay. And that way, I'm sure you actually logged into the cluster and you ran a job. Okay.
Okay. So, sir, it's the job ID that you use to distinguish whose job you're checking on.
Yes, the system will never assign the same job ID to two people.
Okay, sir.
So each person will get set of unique job IDs that are only unique to him. And then I will see the outputs in your own directory, not in somebody else's directory. So you also are not able to copy somebody else's. You can copy somebody else's code, but you'll have to run the job and then something like that. Okay, but it's very easy for me to understand when you copied code. Okay, anyhow, we'll have a slide at the end of the class that discusses the homework, so we can save questions about the homework till then. Okay?
Okay, sir.
Okay, so we'll move on to a different topic. Okay, we're going to talk about another type of trading. It's called OpenMP. Okay, and it's quite superior. I think if you remember during our classes on Ptrades, I mentioned that Ptrades is only available in the C language, in the C programming language. But there are many scientific applications. There are many scientific applications that many scientific applications that are not written in C, but also in Fortran and other platforms. Okay. So OpenMP stands for Open Specification for Multi-Processing. It's not a computer language per se, but it's an add-on to Fortran, C, or C++. It defines an API. It's quite portable, and the parts of OpenMP are broken into directives, then runtime library, as well as environmental variables that are used to control the runtime execution. Okay, OpenMP can be used to convert a serial program to a parallel program. And in that way, it's very easy, and it focuses on what we might call block-based parallelization model. So a lot of the algorithms we were looking at yesterday can simply be transformed to parallel using OpenMP. So it's a very easy way of parallelization, and it hides the complexity of threads. If we go back to this slide, which discusses the pthread application, you will notice that it's not very easy. You will need to know that you have to call pthread exit, you have to create a pthread object as part of your main statement here on this line. That discusses or that defines the number of threads your system will be using. Okay, and then at the end, you have to understand that you have to call pthread exit, and you need pthread create to create your threads. OpenMP, on the other hand, does not do all of this. It just focuses on doing things in parallel. And so it's much way simpler than programming in pthreads. But it also works as threads. So internally, it's all going to happen within one computer. Okay. In a sense, it can use multi-cores that exist on one computer. So it's really for multi-processing. But it hides the complexity of doing threads. So essentially, what we should be looking at our program is that you might have a serial portion. So your program is executing serially, identified by the red incoming arrow. Then it splits into threads. Okay, so it splits into 5 threads here. Each thread does some separate processing, and then they come to a section where they all join back together. They finish the parallel section, and then they continue serially again. And when they get to the next need, they create threads and eventually also come back together again. Okay, so the OpenMP directives are instructions to the compiler. So if a compiler doesn't understand the OpenMP directives, it will simply ignore them. What does this mean? It means I can compile my application for a serial processor, and exactly that same application can be compiled for parallel processing. So you don't have to make changes to code, because the directives will be ignored by other compilers. The directives are typically referred to. Please, your question again.
The last explanation you just gave, I didn't really pick it up.
Okay, so I can create a single source code file that can be compiled for parallel execution or compiled for serial execution. So my C source code, if I compile it on a processor that doesn't support parallel execution, it will work normally and execute serially. If on the other hand, I compile it with the right parallel library, when I arrive at a stage, it will split into parallel threads and carry out the computation. Otherwise, serially, it will simply continue with one thread doing everything. Okay? I think it will be clearer when we look at some actual examples. So the directives to the compiler are typically referred to as sentinels. So in Fortran, the sentinel can be $OMP, or it can begin with C $OMP or asterisk $OMP. Whereas in C or C++, it's hash pragma omp. Okay, the idea is that if a compiler doesn't understand what it's looking at, it simply just skips it. Because typically in Fortran, the exclamation, beginning a line with exclamation or asterisk, could be treated as comments, or even the letter C, capital letter C, could be treated as comments. And in C and C++, the hash is typically used to specify a directive to your preprocessor. And if your preprocessor doesn't understand the directive, it just ignores it. As far as it's concerned, okay, I don't understand it, we go on, life goes on. So this is the technique that is used for introducing OpenMP directives in a parallel program. Okay, if my program has OpenMP directives, then I need to compile it by passing an option to my compiler. And for the GNU compilers, you can have CC minus F OpenMP, and then minus C, my file name, and minus O, your output file. So if everything is okay, your compiler will interpret your C source code. It will introduce the right OpenMP directives and make sure that regions that need to go into parallel, everything is set up for them to work parallelly. And then, of course, you can replace C with C++ if you have a C++ source code. Or you can also use GFortran if you are working with Fortran code. On the Intel compilers, you can actually use ICC minus OpenMP. You don't have the minus F here, but minus C, myfile.c, and minus O, my file. If you're working with Fortran, then it will be IFC instead of ICC. Okay. So what are the things we have looked at so far? Compiler flags for GNU compiler, which will be mostly working with minus F OpenMP. Minus F OpenMP, whether you're working with C or Fortran immaterial. Intel compilers, these are the options, but we don't worry ourselves so much about that. To start the parallel section, to tell the application that at this stage go parallel, it's done using this pragma OMP parallel. We'll focus on the C and C++. Okay. And then to perform a loop, either a do loop or a for loop, you can use this special construct. And then OpenMP will know that you are going to perform a loop in this section, and it will automatically split the loop into chunks that can be executed by individual threads. If you want one thread to wait for other threads, you use the pragma OMP barrier. So it creates a stop point, a stop sign, and the threads are allowed to proceed only when all the threads meet at that point. So that's a synchronization point. There's also the OMP critical. For some code, you want to be executed only by one thread at a time. So they will take turns in stepping into that area of the code. Okay, but they still exist as thread. And then there's also a further refinement to that, OMP atomic. Okay. Let's look at an example. This is C source code, should be quite familiar. For example, it could be part of what we were doing yesterday, trying to add two vectors or multiply two vectors. But we see that we declare a variable A with 1,000 elements. So it's an array or a vector with 1,000 elements. And then we set the OMP number of threads to 4. We tell the OpenMP that we would like to see 4 threads in this application. But then even after we've done all that, the software is still executing serially until it hits this red line, which is pragma OMP parallel. At that stage, it creates the 4 threads automatically. And then each thread can initialize its own variable called ID. And each thread can call a special function, OMP get thread number, that will return the ID of the thread, that will return the thread number or the identifier of this thread. And then each thread is now going to call the a special subroutine. We just named an arbitral subroutine called foo, but it could be anything, with its ID and the common or global variable A. Okay. And then foo executes, each thread executes foo. At the point in which we have the closing block here, you can notice that the pragma section encloses a block here and a terminating block here. At this point, all the threads are collapsed back to a single thread again, okay, because they are only parallel between the section defined by this block or identified by this block. And then we print all done. Okay, and that's all. So I take it again, variable is defined here. So we have one thread, the main thread executing at this stage. The main thread also specifies that, or flags that we want to have 4 threads in any of our parallel section. Okay, and then only when we hit this pragma line do we split into threads. And the threads are only active within this block. Once they hit this closure for the block, they all collapse or exit themselves and join back to the main thread. And it's the main thread that's serial, or the serial application, that prints all done again. Are we clear?
Yes, sir.
I have a question.
Okay, go for it.
At the ending of the curly braces, are you saying that we don't need to put any form of like exit parallelism for the multiple threads? It just automatically go back to the serial execution without any form of call or anything?
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying.
Okay,
once,
sir,
it hits here, you go back to serial execution. So remember this slide, this one. So the coily braces are equivalent to where we have the blue rectangles. So the opening coily brace is at the fork sign. That's why you have the coily braces here. And then the closing coily brace is where the join happens, and they all go back to one, and it happens automatically. You can have as many parallel sections as you want inside your application. So that's the nice thing with OpenMP. You don't have to be parallel right from the beginning, and you don't have to be in parallel beyond where you need to. Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, no questions. We'll go on. Okay. So there are several ways you can specify how many threads you want. Okay, internally you can use OMP set num threads. Okay, to specify exactly how many threads you want inside the application. But you can also override that using an environmental variable called OMP num threads. So if I create an environmental variable with this, the system will ignore this one, the directive that is inside the application, and use the environmental variable instead. Internally, of course, there's a default set by the library based on the processor it finds on your system. And the other thing to note is that your thread ID tends to be zero based. So it always starts counting from zero. So the first thread will be thread zero, then thread one, thread two, thread three, thread four, and so on and so forth. Okay. Okay, so we've seen some of this, but there are also library functions you can call. When you call them, they return to you an output. So OMP get num threads will tell you the number of threads that is in effect currently. Okay, this is a call. This is not the same thing as when we set it. So here we said OMP get thread num. This returns 1, 1. OMP set num threads. This sets the total number of threads we expect at each point in time. This one gets the ID of a single thread. And that's what it's shown here. Get thread num will return the ID of a single thread. Get num threads returns how many threads the system will create if it's asked to parallelize. And then when you are in a parallel section, the function OMP in parallel returns true if we're inside a parallel region. Okay. OMP get max threads tells us the maximum possible number of threads on the hardware we are working with. Okay.
Yes, sir. I have a question. The slide for this one.
This one?
No.
This one?
Not this one. Yes, this OMP num threads. Must it be this environment variable? Must it be this particular words? Or we can use maybe another words and now set the number of threads we want. Must it be this particular words written there?
It has to be exactly like this, and it has to be capital letters like this. Okay. So it must be capital letters, and it must be this exact name. You are not allowed to vary it. Okay, if I'm not mistaken, I believe these were the, on this slide, you also have to use lowercase when working with C. You don't use uppercase names. I believe these uppercase names were more for the Fortran people. So you just use lowercase, but exactly the same name, but all in lowercase letters. Okay.
Okay, sir.
Okay, let's consider a simple example. We want to print our hello world.c. If you look at it, it's almost exactly similar to the same hello world we've been using all along. Okay, with just a few additional lines. So you can see here, we include a new line at the top called omp.h. So we include a header for the OpenMP library, defines the functions that are available and things like that. And then of course, we include our standard io.h. Our main function, we start by printing a line that we are working in parallel. Sorry, we are working in sequential. So at this stage, the part in black, we are still working sequentially, or black and blue. Mm-hmm. And then when we get to this red line, pragma OpenMP parallel, the application is automatically going to create threads. And then each thread is going to print hello from thread number percentage D slash N, and then it gets its thread number by calling the function OpenMP get thread num. I believe we are missing an extra brace here as well as the semicolon. And then we close the brace end of parallel section, and then we are back to the sequential world. And we return hello. Okay. Does that make sense?
Sorry, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes. Manuel has a question.
So from the code, it means that when you are printing the hello world, it starts by considering printing it in a parallel. It's like it's dividing those letters into different threads, then at the end of it, it prints in sequence. Is that what it is? It does?
Please come again, I didn't get you.
According to this code, we want to print. First of all, it has to be printed, it has to be taken into parallel during the printing execution process. It's like it is taking different letters from that word, which will be executed in different threads. Then at the end, it sum up and print it sequentially. Is that what this code does?
No, this code prints out a sentence. It prints hello. Yeah? It's exactly similar to the code we were using last week, which simply prints out hello world. It's just a bit more sophisticated than that. Yeah?
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, go for it.
Now, in this code, do you see that we don't have a need to specify the number of threads we're going to use? Because in the last code, before this, your hash pragma OMP parallel, we said you wrote we need four threads or something or so. And then you now use this hash pragma OMP parallel before you now added your curly braces, but in this code there's
not. Okay, good question. So here we have library implementation default. So if you don't specify, there's a default that will be used. Okay.
Okay, so what's the number of default threads given to you?
It depends on who compiled the OMP library. Okay, I don't know, we can check. It's very easy to check. How do we check? How should we check?
Get thread number.
Yes, we can actually
call of thread.
Any of these functions. Okay, we can call any of these functions. The first one or the last one. OMP get num threads or OMP get max threads. They'll tell us what were the default options that were set on the system. We can practically write an application for this and see. Okay, let me. I hope it's not too big.
No, sir.
Okay, so nano omphello.c. We said we have to start with include omp.h, include stdio.h. Yeah. Okay. So this is our main function. So what do we want? Int, let me see. Serial mode. Yeah. And then we can print F OMP. And we are going to call a library function OMP get. Okay, and then pragma omp parallel. Start my block and I close my block. Yeah. %d/1. OMP get thread num. Close it. Yep. And then here we do again print f. Okay, are we following?
Yes,
so
sir.
We start in serial mode and then we query the libraries to find out the number of threads that's currently in effect, as well as the maximum that the library allows us to go up to. Okay, and then we split into parallel at this stage. Print out a message from each thread, kill off all the threads, and then we print this message as serial again. So we can save this. So if I want to compile OpenMP minus O, OMP, hello, hello, let's see. No news is good news. Everything worked and I can execute it. I can create a job script. Okay, so creating a job script will be nano OMP hello.job. $CWD -JY, I believe. We don't need anything else. Date. OMP hello. Date. Okay. Q sub OMP hello job. So it tells me that my job is 5723. Q start. It says my job is queued, I'm waiting. But you see now it's disappeared. It was queued and waiting, but it's disappeared now. So it's no longer. So if I check, my job ID was 5723. So you can see that I have my job name, OMP hello, job 05728. Nano, let's look at that. Okay. Okay, so here, we have the date starting in serial mode. OMP nums thread is 1. Okay. Max thread is 12. Okay. And then we have hello from thread 0, 1, 2, 10. 3 is down here. 4. 5 is up here. 6 is here. 7. Where is 8, 8, 9, 10, 11, and then back to serial execution, and then we print the date and we are gone again. Does that make sense?
Sir, I have a question.
Yes, what's your question?
In this case now, you have OMP num thread is 1 and max thread is 12. So what is the default number of threads that can be given to a particular file? Are we taking 1 or are we taking 12?
Okay, so basically the default is 1. I didn't define anything. Okay, so the library appears to have used, when it went parallel, it simply set up 12 threads because there are 12 threads on the node that executed this this code. For example,
okay.
Let me do something else. Let me force log into one of the other nodes where I have 40 calls. And if I run just to test OMP hello, let's see what it will do. So you see that on this system, it still says the variable is 1 because we didn't define anything. But the max thread is 40. So it went on to create 40 threads and I get the output from 40 threads. Okay. Now, if I want to set so if I specify this, okay. So simply by specifying 5, I've been able to specify 5 threads, unless maybe I'm using a wrong, maybe a wrong function. Let's see. Vi omp hello, let's see. Omp get num threads, get threads num, or what that's, get thread num. Okay, omp get num threads returns the current number of threads that are working at that point in time. Okay, so my explanation was a bit wrong. So this function tells me how many threads are running at any point in time. This thread gets the ID. This function gets the ID. This one gets the maximum number of threads that we can execute. So setting this variable, okay, specifies the maximum that we're allowed to execute. OMP num threads. Okay, does it make sense now? So if
yes,
you
sir.
Don't specify anything, it sort of figures it out from the processors that are in the machine. So on this machine, we had two 6-core processors. So if I say cat/proc CPU info, this is the Intel Xeon, okay? And these processors have 6 cores each. So you can see it says physical ID 1 here. For the first 6, it'll have said physical ID 0. And this is why we end up with 12. But when I go to the compute nodes and I do the same thing, the processor has changed. So this is E5-2630V4. And we are seeing 39 processors. In reality, there are 2 10-core processors, but because hyper-threading is enabled, we have double that amount, which is 39. So when I run my OpenMP on this and it looks the same application, I didn't have to recompile. I didn't specify anything. It just looks at the number of processors that are available and number of threads, hyper-threading cores and everything, and puts them together to give me maximum number of threads I can use on this machine. Okay. So if I specify 5, if I specify 10, if I specify 20, just follows it. Now, what if I try this? What do you think? If I try this, I have this machine that has only 12 cores, but yet I'm asking for 40 threads. Will it work or won't it work? Does anybody have an idea?
It won't work.
Okay. Any other ideas?
I think it will work, but it won't give you that maximum number of threads. It will just give you the maximum number of threads which are available on that machine.
Okay. It's going to work. Okay, it's going to work. Reason is that in C and things like this, we assume the programmer is king. We assume the programmer knows what he's doing, which is not always true. But it will have to run some threads using context switching, because it doesn't have enough threads physically to carry this out. So it will have to resort to context switching to make sure all the threads I want get executed. So now that we are rolling, 256 threads, yeah, that's fine. But it's going to be doing context switching. So I will lose performance. Okay. Optimal number of threads for this particular hardware is 12. If I do 12, I get the best possible speed. Each thread is running on a core and I get the best possible speed out of it. Okay. If I go to this machine, here I have hyper-threading enabled. So what I will see is two threads are going to run on one core, but it's still very good speed because it's not doing context switching, at least not for the program counter and stuff like that. It's using the internal CPU registers. Can I also ask for 8,000 threads here? Okay, there we go.
Yeah, but I thought the maximum number of threads would be 40, so 8,000 threads is going to be too much.
I think there's a limit, but I'm not sure where. So 1,000 works. So we know 1,000 works, but 8,000 doesn't work. 4,000 doesn't work. So we simply 2,000 works. So between 2,000 and 4,000, let's see if, sorry. Okay, so I think 4,095 might, no, 4,090, yeah, 4,090 works. 4,094 works. So that should be the maximum. 4,095 blows up. And it's going to be the same here, 4,094. Okay, so no, resource temporary unavailable. Nope. Okay, the limit seems to change based on the hardware it's on, right? Three, seven, two, 4,000 doesn't work. So between 3,000 and 4,000 on this particular CPU. Three, six works. Let's try 3,8. 3,8 works. 3,9 doesn't work. So it's something to do with 3,8. 3,850 works. 3,875 works. 3,890. 9,8. Nope. 9,593 maybe. Yep. 3,893. But that appears to be something to do with the processor. Because on the other guy we got up to 4,094. But here we are limited to 3,800. But like I mentioned, they are not running optimally. The operating system will have to do context switching, or the processor will have to do context switching to ensure that it runs this high number of threads. Okay, so you don't really, you should not really, if you don't specify anything and you don't call a library function, it uses the optimal number for your processor. Okay, let's go back to our okay, so this is the equivalent program in 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 Fortran. Well, it does something a bit different. So it does things a bit differently. We will just keep this, but you should know that it seems to be assigning a task for the master thread. Okay, so it asks the master thread to get the number of threads and print what they are. Okay, and then you can see here that they are using this to start the parallel section, and they introduce something new called private. We've not seen this before. And then this one is where they end everything. And then even within this section, only the master thread runs this. Okay, so you can have complex situations. So we create a parallel section, but we specify private end threads and TID. So what this means is that even though we defined end threads and TID as global variables, they are defined up here. When we create threads, each thread should get a private copy of these variables. They will get their own copy that they can modify and that they can change. It's not the same global variable they'll be updating. Whereas if we don't do anything like this, whenever they try to change TID, they are updating the single global copy. Okay. We'll go on. I don't know if anyone is interested in Fortran. Okay, so the basic idea here is the fact that we can see a situation where threads have their own private data, and of course they have their private program counter.
Sorry, I have a question.
Okay, on the Fortran code?
Yeah, on just a question, difference between the Fortran and the C code. In the Fortran, you said you can assign a task to the master thread. Can we do the same thing on the C code?
You can do what? Sorry, I don't get you.
You can have, like in this Fortran code now, we assigned a task to the master thread. Can we do the same thing on the C code?
Yes, you can do exactly the same thing in the C code. But what you need to understand here is the fact that the term master thread is just for convenience. In reality, we are only using thread ID 0. I mean, we're asking the thread with ID 0 to print this out. Okay, it's just another thread. We could as well have used thread number 5 or thread number 7. Okay, so even though we say master thread, there's nothing special about that thread. We're just saying when all the threads arrive at this section, when all the threads arrive here, all of them will skip it, except for a thread with ID of 0. That's the only thread that will execute this section here. Okay, and then here they all wait and then exit. Okay. Okay, so basically what we have to understand is that before threading, all the variables that exist in a program are shared by all threads. They are accessible in read-write to all threads. If you want to have a thread having its own private variables, you either have to declare it after the threads have started, or you use the private definition to create copies of the global variable for each thread. Okay. And typically, if you are going to have a for statement, OpenMP tries to make sure that the loop index is a private variable per thread. So the threads do not see the global variable, but they each have a private copy of that index variable. It does this automatically on your behalf. It's important to try and keep track of which variables are where. And sometimes if you have to use private variables per thread, then it's better to use a naming convention that allows you to identify them easily. It makes your code much more readable and people can follow what's happening. And if there are errors, quickly identify where the errors are and how to fix them. Okay, yes, let's go on. Focusing on loops, OMP has a very, very nice way of dealing with loops because it can use parallel processing only for the loop section. So you don't even need to create threads where you don't need them. The code is typically easy to read, but unfortunately, it may not always be optimal because it's trying to automatically parallelize something that was serial. So the serial implementation may not always be the same as your parallel implementation. There might be better ways of doing things than using loops. Okay, so the best way of doing it is that when you are inside a parallel section, you simply use the pragma openmp for. That tells him that we are going to encounter a for statement. When you hit the for statement, make the variable of that for statement private to each thread and divide the loop. Okay, into chunks to be executed by each thread. Okay. And then if you haven't gone parallel before you are trying to start the loop, you can simply just put this directive below, pragma omp parallel for. That says, we are going into a parallel section and we are doing it only for the for statement. Okay, turn on the optimizations for for. Track the index, segment the index so that we each thread gets a portion of job to do. And then execute them. Okay, not too difficult. Example, sequential code. Okay. For
so
I.
When you say divide the for statement into chunks, what do you mean by that statement? Like, are we like this for statement for this thread, this for statement for this thread, this for statement for this thread? Or are we saying this thread performs this action for, under this for statement, while this other thread performs this action under the same for statement?
Okay, let me see if I can. Get back for us the document we were using for Scratch yesterday. Yeah, I think this was it. Okay, so basically we had a situation. We had a situation where we needed to find the GCD of 20 and 12, right? And we understood that we were going to have to do something like this. So thread one should only do from 12 to 10, right? Are you with me? So I can have, if I was doing
yes,
it serially, I will have a single loop. So let me say serial. serial is equal to 4. Let's copy all of this. So serial is going to go from 12 to 2, right? And then it does everything, and it, once it finds the highest answer, it breaks and it goes out. Now, if I was doing it with threads, okay, each thread does only 3 iterations of the loop. So you can see that thread 1 is only going to do from 12 to 10. Thread 2 will do from 9 to 7. Thread 3 will do from 6 to 4. Okay. And thread 4 will do from 3 to 1. Yeah. Okay. Do you understand it now?
Okay.
So what OpenMDS does is essentially what is described here. It will take your maximum and your minimum values and break them into chunks. And each thread will be allowed to do or asked to do only a certain chunk. Okay, so an example. We have this, if you remember yesterday, it's quite similar to vector addition. Although it's not using C, it's doing a destructive addition. So we have that for I is equal to 0 and I is less than N, I plus plus AI is equal to AI plus BI. And that's the whole loop. That's the serial loop. Now, if I'm doing it in OpenMP, so we can have parallel section, okay? Essentially in this code, OMP will create parallel, task, but all the tasks are going to be asked to do this. They are all going to do exactly the same thing. It doesn't do anything special for this for statement. So the threads, each thread will execute, getting the ID, getting the number of threads. They'll carry out their, so here essentially what I'm doing is identifying a start section. So I say that my start for a thread is going to be my ID times N, which is the maximum value here, divided by number of threads. My end is going to be ID plus 1 times N divided by number of threads. So if we work it out, thread 0 is going to start with from 0. 0 times N divided by number of threads will be 0. 1 times N divided by number of threads will give us exactly N divided by number of threads. So each thread will make this calculation and come up with the right and start and stop. And then my loop is just for the start to the end. And we do only a section of the work. So I have manually built my various indexes for the individual threads using an algorithm, of course, using mathematics. So I didn't have to assign fixed values. Once I vary n, everything should fall in place. Once I vary number of threads, everything should fall in place, okay? And then each person does some work and that's it. Of course, this is not a perfect code. There are already issues that you might identify, which is assuming N is not completely divisible by number of threads. What happens? Essentially, there's going to be some, according to this, there's going to be some items lost. I don't know if you get it, or one of the threads is going to run into a problem and blow up. Now, if I simply specify this, Pragma, OMP, Force Schedule, Static. And I put the Force statement. OMP will make these calculations by itself, okay, for each thread, and ensure that each thread simply ends up with the right portions. And it will automatically take care of situations where there are, where n is not completely divisible by number of threads. Does that make sense? So sequential code, manual implementation, and OMP implementation, or the correct way of doing it with OMP. I mean, the choice is yours. As a programmer, you can choose to go this way. You know what you are doing. OMP can also do it for you this way. And you write less, you simply just put a pragma directive before your for statement. You didn't need all this code. So you can actually see that I don't need all these variables here that are being defined here. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines are not needed. I just replace them with another pragma and my for statement, and I'm done. And that's my code. And then if I have a serial code, I don't really need to worry myself. If I compile it on a serial computer, it will do only this. One core or one thread will act on just this and give me the right results. If I'm doing it on OpenMP, at this point, it forks into a number of threads. And then it then schedules the for statement by splitting the various loops here for each thread. And each thread will perform a section and everything should be okay. Okay. Are there any questions or is it difficult to understand?
No, sir.
Okay, we move on.
Yes, it's really.
So essentially, this is more or less a very clear example here. So we define a variable called res, short for results, I guess, with 1,000 elements, and we are going to have a loop. And the loop is going to call a function do huge compute, okay, with an index value of res, okay, and stuff like that. So this is a sequential program. One thread will have to loop over all the 1,000 elements in the sequential program. Now, if I simply add this line to my code and compile with minus F OpenMP, what happens is that at this stage, OpenMP will create X number of threads, as many threads as are available in this computer. It will divide the for loop into chunks that can be addressed by each thread and carry out the calculation. Does that make sense? And when the for loop terminates at this point here, all the threads will come back together again, and that's the end of the application. Okay. So it's very easy. So typically what happens is that work is going to be divided between the threads, usually sequentially until we get to the end. And then, like I mentioned, once it hits the end of the for statement, okay, it performs an implicit barrier. Okay, so here they split the work, and then once it gets to the end, they synchronize themselves. And then if you had X number of threads before, they continue working. Okay, so is it possible to change how it does the sequencing, especially for loops? You can specify that. You can specify static using the schedule object. Schedule static simply means that it will split the iteration statically amongst the threads. Okay, and if there are n threads, every thread will do end iteration. So in this case, we have red and green threads. So you can see that red and green is doing, I mean, they are alternating between themselves. Red, green, red, green, red, green, red, green, red, green, red, green. And then in this case, the yellow and the blue threads are also alternating amongst themselves. Okay. So we see here, this is the effect of the directive static three. So we are saying in chunks of three. So it's going to, for three rows, assigns what's available between, so we have two threads, and for three rows is simply alternating between each thread, assigning the chunks to each thread. And then for the next three rows, assigning the chunks, again, based to two threads. Okay, and that's the end of the loop. On the other hand, when you say dynamic, yes.
For the case of static, in this open parallel do and open scheduler static three, it means that each thread will be using three chunks.
You are asking OpenMP to assign three chunks, to assign the chunks in terms of three.
Okay. So it means that each thread will be having three chunks.
Yes, as you can see here that we have 1, 2, 3 rows. Yeah. So in this situation, three rows. So my loop index, so J will be sort of varied in chunks of three. So thread one will do 1, 2, 3. And you see there are numbers in here. Thread one will do loop 1, 2, 3. Thread two is going to do 4, 5, 6. Thread three is going to do 7, 8, 9. And thread four will do 10, 11, 12. Then we come back to one again, thread one or the thread zero. So this is a situation with four threads. And we're asking for assignments in chunks of three. So thread one does three jobs or three loop iterations. So 1, 2, 3 in this situation. Then thread two is going to do 4, 5, 6. Thread three is going to do 7, 8, 9, and thread four is going to do 10, 11, 12. Then thread one will come to 13 again. So when thread one finishes three, it jumps to 13. When thread two finishes six, it jumps to 16. When thread four finishes 12, it jumps to 22. It has to leave the gap for all the other threads that are working. Is it clear now?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. The alternative is to specify dynamic. You can also specify chunks in dynamic. The only difference is that once a thread finishes, it looks for what is available and starts working on that. So in this situation, we are specifying a dynamism of one. So we have four threads. So thread one is working, thread two, thread three, thread four. But you can see that thread two finished first. So thread two went on to start on loop number five. Yeah. And thread four finished then next and it picked up loop number six. Thread seven finished, thread three picked up loop number seven. And then the red thread picked up loop number 8. It's also possible that in certain situations, a thread might even do 2 iterations. So for example, 21, the red thread finished 21, and then it immediately picked up 22 because nobody else has started working on that. Then the next thread that became available was green thread, and that picked up 23. So dynamic says, okay, whoever is available, pick up the next work to do and go ahead and do it. Okay, there's more overhead, but you might get better load balancing in this situation. Maybe, maybe not. Better or worse load balancing. Okay. Especially if the N is not completely divisible by number of threads. Is that clear?
Yes, sir, it's clear.
Okay. So, summary. We can schedule static and we specify a chunk and it will sort of walk through the iterations, assigning chunks to each thread to perform. And you can do a dynamic, but chunks again, but then whoever is ready picks up the next chunk. Okay. You can say guided, in which case it will use a shrinking window. Okay, so each thread will try to grab a large amount of chunks, but successively shrinking it down to chunk size. Okay. So you can also specify an environmental variable called OMP schedule, in which case you can specify schedule runtime. And that means in this environmental variable, I will define what you need to do, whether I want to have dynamic chunk or static chunk. Okay, so you can, in principle, compile your program using this directive, and then you change from the command line to try and see which one gives you better result. Okay, and so at the end of a loop, the threads are going to wait so that all the threads finish looping before they all continue. Okay, and in C, you can use the no wait loop clause to ensure that you break out of that. Okay, in Fortran, this is typically the default. And you don't really need an end do, and the threads will continue executing once they finished, and there are no free chunks, no more chunks to be done on that loop. They continue with what they were doing. But in C, they will all wait and then synchronize themselves before they now start continuing that task again. Okay. Okay, another smartness in OpenMP is that it can do automatic reduction. So if you remember our exercise of yesterday, I think, where was the scratch? I close it. Yeah. If you remember our exercise yesterday here, we said that for this one, it had to carry out a multiplication for the factorial. So at the end of the various, each thread does a chunk of loops. So thread 1 is going to do loops 1 to 5. Yeah, thread 2 is doing 6 to 10, thread 3 is doing 11 to 15, and thread 4, 16 to 20. And then when they all finish, I need to multiply their results to get the right answer. Okay. OpenMP allows you to do that automatically. Okay. So you can specify that using the keyword reduction. Then you specify the operation that needs to be performed and the list of variables. Operation colon, the list of variables that this should be applied to. Okay, once it sees this reduction statement, it knows that I have to create a local variable for each thread. So it's, even if you have a common answer, it's going to sort of make a private variable for each thread such that their own answer they are computing is kept private until we get to the end. Then at the end, it carries out the operation you specify, okay, and then applies that to the list of variables. So if you specify a multiplication, it will perform the multiplication at the end, a final multiplication of all the results together. And then if you perform an addition, a final addition is specified together. This is typically going to be useful. Let me see what we have. Okay, especially for the kind of examples we were showing yesterday. Okay. Are there any questions? So for when we have to do sums and products, it already helps us a lot. So are there other kinds of operations that can be performed? Yes, you can also have, so it's not just addition and multiplication, but you can also have subtraction. You can have bitwise AND, you can have the bitwise OR. Okay, you can have logical AND, logical OR, and things like that. Okay, example, Fortran example, no, a C example. So here we are asking for two threads, okay? And then we are defining our variables in the serial section. We set the number of threads and then we go into a parallel loop. So it's going to parallelize just for this loop and it's going to use two threads. Okay, and you can see here that we have global variables. Sum is sum plus ZZ. So ZZ is the result of a function. Okay, so it's adding the output from this function to sum. Okay, so each at this point, so once we say reduction, you can see here that we specify private as well for ZZ. Okay, and then once we say reduction, it's going to use the addition at the end of the day, and that's going to be applied on the variable called sum. So when we get to this point, the end of the loop is going to take the sum from thread one and add it to the sum for thread two and update the global variable called sum. Okay, easy to follow? Yeah. Okay, so this is a Fortran implementation of the integration we're looking at. Looking at yesterday. So it's going to calculate pi based on this equation. And it does a loop.
Sir, question please.
Yes, please.
Sir, what if in a case where we need to look for the maximum at the end of the operations? How can we represent it in the reduction function?
Okay, so you need to find the max. Let me see. How are we going to do that? Multiple reductions. Okay, the truth is C, I think, doesn't have a max function. You probably need to write your own max function. Okay. It seems to try to follow the standard C operators in this regard. So.
Okay, sir.
Anyhow, so how can we do that? Can we, are we allowed to sort of use arbitrary function? Or is there anything you can do with logical and logical? Anyway, let me think about it and then I'll come back to you and I'll try and see if there's a way we can use logic to figure that out. Maybe we can use the and or to figure out what that should be. There might be a set of operations we can do in that respect. Okay. Okay, so this is more or less an implementation of the idea yesterday about calculating an integral. So yesterday we saw this graph where we are looking at the midpoints and then we're calculating the area of these rectangles and adding them together to get the area under the function. So the function in this case, f of x, I believe is given by this equation. So the rectangle is being calculated here. X is W times 1 minus 0.5. So the midpoint between, so we're doing that varying from I. So we can say I is your X. So when we're at I is equal to 1, we want to make the calculation for 0.5, the mean midpoint between the 0 and the 1. And then when we're in the second tranche, we want to make the calculation for the midpoint here. When we're in the third, we want to make the calculation here. When we're in the fourth, we want to make the calculation here. So essentially, X is what we will get for the area. The width, this, times the midpoint here. Okay, and then we toss that into the equation. Okay, which is 4 blah, 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 divided by 1 plus x times x. Okay, and we have a value for s. So at the end of the day, we are going to have to try and calculate pi using a width for each calculation. So this calculates x. This calculates the function f of x. And then at the end of the day, we simply take the result of the function and multiply it together. So privately, each guy has a different x, each thread has a different x and a different value of I. Okay. And then reduction wise, we are saying sum up the various S. So reduction will automatically ensure that each thread has a different value of S or a different variable S. And then when they all finish, it now calculates everything and puts them together. So the loop will end here. And then we perform a single calculation saying our width times the f of x should give us the final answer. And we calculate the error with respect to our reference value. Okay. So as you can see here, the width is 1 divided by n. So it's very easy to vary this application. You can, I think it will be quite easy to write the C version of this. And then you can test and see that if you change the value of n, you increase in accuracy. So if you make this 1,000, if you make it 1 million, make it 5 million, you should find that your absolute error is reducing as you progress. And of course, the real variable is going to be the same as your float. Okay. Okay. So it's also possible to say that I want to go parallel only on a certain condition. So in this case, you can use the if clause. So pragma omp parallel if. You can see it says if there are more than 1,000 tasks, then we go parallel and we do tasks. Okay. Of course, I think there's a space missing, do next task. While task is greater than zero, do next task. So if there are not enough tasks to justify your creating threads, you simply work serially. Okay, does that make sense? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, what are the issues with respect to OpenMP? If we are not careful, memory organization can lead to caching problems, especially when you have the NUMA architecture. I think we had dealt with this a little bit in the class. I'm not sure if it was yesterday or Monday, where we spoke about the fact that if your data is not optimally arranged for the threads, one thread will have to be starved waiting for data because other threads have filled the cache with their own data. Okay, so one has to also watch out for that. There are always overheads with creating threads. So it's not like it's a completely, because you have to create separate program counters and separate stacks and things like that for each thread. So you keep track of where they are. So it's not negligible. The more threads you have, the higher the overhead. Okay. And then many times during the critical section, the threads have to sort of wait for themselves. Okay, so you must make sure that you minimize your critical sections, otherwise, critical and atomic sections, otherwise the threads will have to wait for one another. And that slows down the overall execution. Because at that point, you have the threads working, but they're all waiting. Some might be waiting, some other ones might be doing, might be acting. And then global variables, you should look at, make sure if you are going to work with private and global namespace, you have to define your names correctly so there are no collisions. You may also have race conditions happening when two threads try to update variables or write outputs, things like that. So one has to watch out for that too. So especially if you are maybe writing outputs to a file, it's best to always do this in a serial or sequential section. So you sort of have all the threads joined together and then write the output to the file. Okay, so OpenMP is an API that is an addition to C, C++, or Fortran. With OpenMP, we can easily convert any serial code to parallel. Okay. OpenMP, unfortunately, is limited to shared memory systems. This means that it's only going to work within a computer. It focuses on working only within a computer. We cannot use OpenMP to access CPU and memory that are in a different computer. We will have to use a hybrid distributed model to achieve that. But we shall mention that in subsequent classes. Okay, are there any questions or comments? So we've lost Victor and Emmanuel.
No, sir.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions? It's all clear.
Yes, it is.
Yes, yes.
Okay. 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 That's fine. So Emmanuel is back. Okay, so if we're all okay, then we can go on to discuss our second homework. Okay, so essentially follow the steps on slides 3 and 4 and create your own pthello.c application. So your pthreads application, submit it as a job to a cluster, okay? And once you've successfully submitted one, that's fine. Make a record of its job ID. Then in the second case, modify your C code to change the message produced by each thread. It has to include your first name and your last name. After you've done that, recompile the application and submit a new job and note the job ID again, because you have to tell me the job ID of these jobs. And then the second part is create your own new hello.c using OpenMP. Okay. It should print out how many threads are executed and the thread ID for each thread. Okay, you are doing it, of course, in C. And once you've written it out, compile it, create a job script, and submit it 5 times. You will have to provide me with the job IDs of 7 jobs, 2 for the thread application, 1 without your name, 1 with your name, and then 5 for the OpenMP thread application. Then I want you to look at the various outputs and provide something about the ordering of threads. How are the threads ordered? Do you see one thread finishing faster than the other? Does thread 0 finish before thread 5? Does thread 1 finish before thread 6? And look at it over the 7 jobs and then tell me what you think. Is it a random situation or is there some pattern you can notice from that? This is what each one of you is to provide me for the homework too. Okay. Okay, so I'm sure that when you actually do the openmp hello.c, you'll discover that it's really so easy to program in parallel. Okay.
Excuse me, sir.
This is where the power is. You are now able to make use of a quad core system and use it efficiently simply by using OpenMP. And if you have an existing serial application, you can improve its performance thanks to OpenMP. Even simply, even something as simple as focusing on the loops can already give you a big boost in performance. But you will also realize that if you can use the thread IDs, you can even create different sections of your code that different threads will execute. So it's quite a very powerful API or library. Okay, are there any questions?
So that's an OpenMP part that OpenMP part, the assignment that was to, Lisa, can you go back to the slide?
Okay. Just give me a minute. Get the slide back up. Share screen. As the homework slide, eh? Oops, sorry.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Here we are.
So the that means the OpenMP was just to write those thread things and those thread those many to get the maximum thread, all those thread information that it gave us. That's all we're just writing the Hello application.
Yes.
Okay, but it doesn't have to be in that parallel section, or it has to be in the parallel section.
If you have it in the parallel section, it's just a duplication. So it's up to you. It doesn't have to be there. Okay.
Okay.
Anyhow, if you use the directive in the parallel section, it should output out a different value. I mean, if you
so
call
if
that
put
function.
In, okay. Come
again.
Put in the parallel section. If we put it in the parallel section to give us a different value from only in the serial section.
Yes.
Okay.
So here, let's take this one. You'll discover that this is going to be printed by each thread. Okay, so we can even do better. I can put a message such. What's happening here? Okay, so I want to print that out, but I can also do this. Are you with me? Of
yes, I'm with you.
Percentage D. And then I have this again. Okay, so this is just a slight modification to the code. I compile it cc minus f openmp minus o omp hello hello. Let's see. Okay, and if I run it omp hello, so you can see that once I'm in the threaded section, I do get the number of threads currently running to be 12. Okay. Maximum thread is 12. In the serial section, number of thread running is 1. In the parallel section, I'm thread 4 of 12, 6 of 12, 9 of 12, 5 of 12, 10 of 12, 7 of 12. So we print out this. Okay.
Okay, sir.
Is it clear now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So create a job script and submit your job script as well. Submit your job script to the cluster. Once you submit, you are rewarded with a job ID. And these are the job IDs you need to submit to me. You need to tell me or send to me as part of your homework.
Okay, sir.
Okay, are there any more questions? Okay, it's all clear.
Yes, sir, it's clear.
Okay. Okay. Are there any other things you want us to touch on? Because after today, we are sort of going to a different, trying to work with software across computers, how we can build a software that overcomes the limitations of an individual computer. And so now we've seen how we can make use of the number of cores we have on a computer, number of cores and number of threads we have on a processor. Okay, we want to see how we can expand this beyond the limits of a single computer. That's what we'll be looking at starting Monday next week. Okay. There's still a lot to cover, but we'll see what we can do. Either that or a bit of CUDA programming. CUDA is GPU, massive cores, where I have thousands of cores. Okay, anything? No comments? You all enjoyed today's class?
Yes, sir, we did. Oh, I did.
Okay, please log into the HPC cluster and carry out these exercises. Okay? Okay. The IFA one is on, the AUST one, I don't know, they keep telling me that NEPA, electricity and stuff like that. But we'll probably have to try and get that up for the CUDA. Okay, so we don't have any class tomorrow, but you should use the time allocated for the class for completing this homework. It will take you less than 3 hours to do, okay? And reviewing the stuff that we did at this time, I mean, that we've done this week. Okay, if there are any questions, you can send them by email or bring them to class on Monday.
Okay, sir.
Okay, have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam.
Okay, bye.
Bye.